However, as emphasized in 1954 by Fred Hoyle, in order for this process to account for the observed cosmic abundance of carbon, there must be a state of the carbon nucleus that has an energy that gives it an anomalously large probability of being formed in the collision of a helium nucleus and a nucleus of beryllium-8. Precisely such a state was subsequently found by experimenters working with Hoyle. Once carbon is formed in stars, there is no obstacle to building up all the heavier elements, including those like oxygen and nitrogen, that are necessary for known forms of life. But in order for this to work, the energy of this state of the carbon nucleus must be very close to the energy of a nucleus of beryllium-8 plus the energy of a helium nucleus. If the energy of this state of the carbon nucleus were too large or too small, then little carbon or heavier elements would be formed in stars, and with only hydrogen and helium, there would be no way that life could arise. The energies of nuclear states depend in a complicated way on all the constants of physics, such as the masses and electric charges of the different types of elementary particles. It seems at first sight remarkable that these constants should take just the values that are needed to make it possible for carbon to be formed in this way. The evidence that the laws of nature have been fine-tuned to make life possible does not seem to me very convincing. For one thing, a group of physicists has recently shown that the energy of the state of carbon in question could be increased appreciably without significantly reducing the amount of carbon produced in stars. Also, if we change the constants of nature, we may find many other states of the carbon nucleus and other nuclei that might provide alternative pathways for the synthesis of elements heavier than helium. We do not have any good way of estimating how improbable it is that the constants of nature should take values that are favorable for intelligent life. Whether or not the anthropic principle is needed to explain anything like the energies of nuclear states, there is a context in which it would be only common sense. Perhaps the different logically acceptable universes all in some sense exist, each with its own set of fundamental laws. If this is true, then there are certainly many universes whose laws or history make them inhospitable to intelligent life. But any scientist who asks why the world is the way it is must be living in one of the other universes in which intelligent life could arise. A Soviet emigre physicist told me that a few years ago a joke was circulating in Moscow, to the effect that the anthropic principle explains why life is so miserable. There are many more ways for life to be miserable than happy. The anthropic principle only requires that the laws of nature should allow the existence of intelligent beings, not that these beings should enjoy themselves. The weak point of this interpretation of the anthropic principle is that the meaning of a multiplicity of universes